I didn't see Paul yet. Hey, good morning, guys.
See you guys. Good to see you. How are you? Good. Good. Empty class this morning. Want to go? You never know. Oh, Derby weekend.
Yeah,
That's
people
fine.
are recuperating. That was my suggestion to Margo. People recuperating. Here we go. Now we got some people signing up. I'll go by the clock on the wall. It's a little bit slower.
Go by their time.
Like about 2 minutes. We got a good picture of Sharon Cat's butt. Wants to be on camera. Pay attention to me, please. Pay attention. Eyes on me. No matter how much love you give me, I want some more. Morning, everybody. As we gather together, as we've done on many other Sunday mornings, let us set our intention for the healing of the world and ourselves. I'm reminded of Scott Peck's definition of love. And he said, love is the ability to stretch oneself for one's own spiritual growth or the growth of another. So I believe what we're doing on Sunday mornings is stretching ourselves for our own spiritual growth and the growth of one another. When I say one another, I don't just mean those who are online. All creatures, all creation. Because all of our hearts are yearning for the same thing. And even though our goal might be quite clear sometimes, it becomes quite easy to get lost. Or fall into forgetfulness. And that is not a condemnation, it is simply an awareness. So one of the many reasons why I come here on Sunday morning is to remember, or to remind myself that I already know. As I was looking over a couple of initial paragraphs for our work this morning, I was struck by the continuing and growing distinction that they are making between consciousness from my higher self and consciousness from my everyday self, my little self. And again, it's not condemning my small consciousness, but being aware that we don't use that as a definition of who we are. And that it becomes, let's say, it becomes more natural to live out of higher consciousness than it does living out of lower consciousness. That might be a gentle way of putting it. It becomes more natural. It's not forced. I'm not even consciously aware of making that choice all the time, but it's there. How could I, asking ourselves a question, for instance, how could I see this differently? How could I hold this differently? How could I be aware of myself? How could I be aware of my relationship with other people? How could I be aware of them or myself differently than I am at this moment? Simple question, deep realization. So I suggest that you just kind of keep that in mind as we walk through the lesson today. Of being aware of the consciousness of my higher self, consciousness of my limited personality, nature. We're going to begin on the top of page 250. And just as a link between this week and last week, it ended by saying, when you open the door, in other words, when you open yourself up to higher consciousness, choice we make. And when we open ourselves to that choice, what we do is we let our higher self take over. So it's not like I surrender to my higher self and this is what's going to happen. My small self is not in control of that. I open myself up to an awareness of how my higher consciousness is going to reveal itself. I don't know what that's going to look like. I don't know what that's going to feel like. I don't need to know what it's going to look like or feel like. When you open the door, you integrate it on a level of agreement, the divine self that has been waiting for you in manifestation. There's a wonderful Hindu story. I'm not going to go into it right now, but I might send it as a reflection. But God saying to one of his followers, what took you so long? Or as a friend of mine related one time or another, he was a theology teacher. And I think it was at a Catholic college, and so theology was at least a one semester requirement. And of course that had all sorts of believers and non-believers, skeptics, cynics. can imagine what you will, what you'd be like at theology class as a freshman in college. And I remember one of his students came up to him at the end of the semester and sort of mockingly said, "Do you ever think I'll find God?" And he said, "No." Which kind of shocked him. He said, "But God will find you." When you open the door, you integrate it on a level of agreement, the divine self that has been waiting for you in manifestation. And that doesn't happen just once. I open the door again and again, because sometimes, not on purpose necessarily, but sometimes I close the door. I'd rather be here. I'd rather be there. I'd rather respond this way. Now we will take Paul's question. He's hiding in the corner. It's a long list of them. What happens next, he asks. What happens after you open the door? The way Ram Dass put it, he said, was, he didn't use the image of a door, but it could, pretty close to it. He says, when you are awake, when you wake up, you can never really go to sleep again. You can doze. You can fall into forgetfulness sometimes, all right? But you're never going to be quite as oblivious as you might have been before. Just can't. And so on the spiritual path, there's always, it's not just going to be two steps forward, one step backwards. It's always going to be forward, even though it doesn't feel that way. What happens next? Here is what happens next. You will be required in many situations to remember to be the self that is high, and you will not align to the memory of what was as a course of action. Well, here's the way I used to deal with that particular problem. And that's sort of an interesting setup too, because one of the ways we realize we've grown or changed or transformed is because we find ourselves responding to some life situations differently than we might have before. Oh, I can remember a year ago, I would have responded this way to that particular problem or that particular difficulty. And then I realized I have the ability, I didn't realize I had it, but I have the ability to respond to that particular situation differently than I did before. Because you did it this way yesterday will not mean you do it this way today. Because you were someone else yesterday does not mean that will be your expression today. You are facing the self in all of your encounters. You are facing that choice. How am I going to relate to this, out of higher consciousness or lower consciousness? And our awareness, that's another thing that I believe has expanded over the months that we've worked together here. My awareness has expanded in the process. So I become, not only do I have the choice more often, but I become aware that I have the choice more often. Doesn't make the choice necessarily always a lot easier, but at least I know it's there. Now the face you see in your encounters will show you where you stand, will show you your alliance and your agreement to the divine self. I will know more clearly when I'm aligned to divine consciousness or when I'm aligned to lower consciousness. Just as a for instance, I still watch the news. And after the news is over, I find that I am somewhat entrapped in lower consciousness. Ain't it awful? Did you hear what so-and-so said? Oh, I hope they stick them to the wall. Whatever is going on in my mind. And here I am. One of the things that got me a couple of days ago when I realized this was, here I am rejoicing in someone else's misfortune. Oh, really? Is that one of the Beatitudes? Rejoice with me in so-and-so's misfortune, because then because you will be exalted. I don't think so. So just that one point of view, here I am exalting myself in terms of someone else's misfortune. I'm saying, that's not it. And so when I find myself in a situation that brings me into lower consciousness, and it could be anything, could be trying to balance my checkbook, brings me into lower consciousness. Scarcity consciousness in that case. So as soon as I find myself there, it takes a while for me to recognize that's where I am. But I find out that my vision of the entire world, excuse me, becomes strained because of that. My outlook at everybody and everything else in the entire world becomes affected by that negativity. So it isn't just that one thing, it isn't just that one person, it isn't just those couple of things that might happen in the news so much, it colors everything. And then I need to stop and ask myself, do I really want that thought? Do I really want the energy of that thought to release that into the universe? Because that's where it goes, and it affects everyone and everything. Do I really want that to happen? Do I really want my grandson to experience the anger of my wrath, the judgment that comes from it? Do I really want that to happen? Do I really want to look him in the eyes and say, you know what, Finn? You're not enough, and there's something wrong with you. I couldn't even believe thinking that. And yet that's what happens. I can't just pick and choose. Well, this negative thought is going to affect these people over here, but it's not going to affect these people over here. It affects everyone. Yeah, John, could you speak in the mic?
Somewhere one. When the Israelites, Egyptians drowned in the Red Sea, what did God do? He said God wept. That always seemed so opposite of the victory, you know.
There is no victory when someone suffers. One of the most powerful, and in fact, the shortest verse in Christian scripture is when Jesus discovers that his friend Lazarus has died and he wasn't there to help out. It says, Jesus wept.
Gary,
Yeah, John.
I'm getting an image this morning as we talk about that is really interesting to me anyway. I'm remembering, and I've talked about this before in our class, a ropes course I went through where we had to climb 30 or 40 feet up into the air and then walk across a wire. And then when we there were after the going across the wire, there were all these other exercises we had to do. And every time you would do one, the facilitator would challenge you to do it again a different way. And so you would do it this way, and he said, great, now close your eyes and do it. And then that was scary, and you're 40 feet in the air. And then do it this way and turn around, do it backwards. Now do it upside down. It was just, it was incredible, and it was painful, and it was wonderful when you got through each step. But what I'm thinking about is when I was up there, I was totally focused on myself and what I was going through, my exercise. Before I went up there, and after I went up there, I was on the ground and I was watching other team members go through it. And So sometimes I think we're on the ground and we watch other people go through stuff and we judge them for what they're going through. Oh, they should have done it this way. Oh, look at them. They're really screwing this part up. But when you're up there, all you can focus on is yourself and is your experience and what you're feeling and how you're going to let go of the fear and move forward. And somehow this all ties together. And I'm sitting here going, whoa, when I watch other people on the news or whatever, and I make a judgment about them, it's like standing on the ground. And I'm not part of that step in the ropes course. But when I'm in my own situation on the ropes course, I don't have time for other people. I am so focused on my fear and letting go of it and dealing with it. So anyway, I thought it was kind of interesting as an image.
Thanks, John. The integration of this into your lives, this connection to divine consciousness, is a process of agreement and layers of agreement as we ascend the mountain with you. So it's not a one-shot deal. Because I change, can't step in the river twice. I change, my alignment changed, the energy of divine consciousness might not change, but is ever expanding. And so my alignment with it in this moment is going to be different from my alignment with it the next moment and the next and the next. So I don't say, well, okay, well, I aligned myself to divine consciousness this morning. As soon as I woke up, that's done. What's for breakfast? It's okay to ask what's for breakfast, okay to cook breakfast, but remember that my commitment, my alignment to divine consciousness continues from one choice, one moment to the next, to the next, to the next. The imprinting has been done today in the opening of the door, the field you were in, the energy you were in. And by opening the door and arriving at this stage, stage two, if you like, of the mountainside, the reckoning with the self, the facing of the self, you are moving toward a process of reclamation in your vibration of your true being. It will encounter you in different ways. So the many different ways, maybe even in this hour when we're together, the many different ways that we encounter the challenge to identify with our higher consciousness. How does that present itself from 1 minute to the next? Another level of energy there of another way we could put that to ourselves, I think, is in this moment in time, how can I be open to the unconditional love that I am? How can I be more aware of the unconditional love that I am? How can I let that sink in? That in this moment in time, there's nothing else I need to do, nowhere else I need to go. To be here now, be here at this moment, be totally present to one another. As John was saying, that's rather difficult when I've got a whole lot of stuff on my own plate. And yet that's really where part of the challenge is. How can I be aware of the unconditional love of who and what you are, even though I'm in the midst of my own crisis? I don't throw one away. I don't pretend that it's not there. Lord, that I may see, can I see you for who you truly are, no matter what happens to be going on with me, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. I don't deny one or the other. You are aligning to truth. And as we have said, the alignment to truth cannot be feared. It will be feared by your lower self. It will be feared by your ego consciousness, I believe, because your ego is always afraid of something, that something is going to be bigger than it is, or something is going to knock it off, king of the mountain. So even though the alignment of truth cannot be feared by the divine consciousness, by the divine self, it probably will be feared by my ego and my small self, because it's afraid of what it's going to lose. Truth, we will say, is never fearful, because it is in your knowing. And when you know, you are not afraid. The alliance you have in truth, I know who I am in truth, what I am in truth, how I serve in truth, removes the veils of self-deception that you have operated through. When you are in truth, you cannot be deceived by the small self's requirements to know herself in the encounters with others in the way she has decided they should be. She is unchanged from the expectations of her historical self, because the claim of freedom, I am here, has been known and sung in the field you hold. As you choose to go on this journey, as you align to it each step of the way, you give thanks for the lessons that come, every one of them. If something happens in your life that requires you to see yourself as you truly are, and that includes those ways that you have believed yourself to be but are not, in truth, you will give thanks for the opportunity to learn. And that includes anything, I know we've said this before, I need to be reminded of this one too. Anything that shows up in my life is, at least one way to observe it or look at it, is a lesson to be learned. And it's also a lesson to be learned that I created. I might not have created the circumstances, but I created the lesson I'm supposed to learn from. Circumstances might have to do with a whole bunch of other things. But that could be anything from a spilled cup of coffee to a fender bender, someone being difficult to deal with. Could be a lot of different things. What is it that shows up in your life that is the biggest challenge to being or reacting or responding to it from higher consciousness? I can pick out some people in my life that make it rather difficult. I'm sure you can too. I can pick out a few situations in my life and make it difficult.
Jerry?
Yeah.
Last night I was at the Louisville airport waiting to pick up my son, his wife, and his little daughter, who's 14 months old. And it's 9:15, and their plane is supposed to get in at 9:15. I get a text from my son, we've landed, we're at the embassy soon. And I'm sitting there waiting, and time goes by. I think they're going to be there in 5 minutes. And it's 10 minutes, and it's 15. I see people coming past and wearing shirts. They were coming from San Diego, wearing shirts with San Diego on them. Other people, and then it's 20 minutes, 25 minutes. They put down the security gate. Still, no one's there. Another 30 minutes, 35 minutes, 40 minutes, and then comes my son and my daughter-in-law and my little granddaughter, who is just learning to walk, or has been learning to walk.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell that my son is a bit thin. There's a little bit of strain there between him and his daughter. And it turns out that my little granddaughter wanted, she loves to smell flowers. Of course, this is the Derby. There are roses everywhere. And she wants to smell everything. So, there was a teaching moment that I felt right there. And
I thought it was wonderful. You know, it didn't bother me at all that I was concerned. But I wondered in seeing my son often I in my past have been frustrated because of someone else's needs. My little granddaughter needed to learn how to walk for practice. She needed to smell those roses. And yet, you know, we either rejoice in them meeting those needs, or we can be frustrated or patient or somehow not even aware.
Yeah.
That was a good life lesson
Wow.
for me.
And here's this little kid having no problem to stop and smell the roses. In fact, that was her task. This is who I am in this moment. I am a smeller of roses. Don't bother me. Don't interfere with my trip. Totally involved in doing that one wonderful thing. And that's another way that I think we can be in higher consciousness. I remember when Bill Moyers was interviewing Joseph Campbell after he had written, after the book Hero with a Thousand Faces came out and became really, really popular. I mean, it had come out years ago, but somehow or another, this whole idea of mythology came out. And so he was interviewing him when the book really became famous. He said something to the effect, Bill Moyer said something to the effect of, Joseph, you speak a lot of following your bliss. How do you know you are in your bliss? And he had an answer for him right away. He said, when time disappears, when I'm not attached, it's not part of my mind is occupied with how long this is going to take. When my mind is totally detached from any of that, time is an unnecessary requirement. I am right here, right now. And I am so absorbed in what I love and what I am doing that time is irrelevant. So it could be reading a book, could be smelling the roses, could be writing a song, could be listening to a piece of music, could be anything, could be a lot of different things. When I'm so absorbed in this energy that time or this measure of change is irrelevant. And I think we've all done things like that, become lost in something and looked over at the clock and go, where'd the time go? What didn't really go anyplace? What happened was that I was so absorbed in something that I dearly loved doing and maybe even loved me back, but the time became irrelevant. So I love that example you gave, Matt, because there's lessons to be learned in so many areas. The obvious one is with the child. But then, you're feeling for your son as well, and your daughter-in-law, what was going on with them. And I can't force anybody to learn a lesson. You couldn't just stop and say, well, what are you learning about this? Okay, that probably would not have worked too well. But now, if we don't know how conscious another person might be of asking themselves the same question. But here I am annoyed on some level of my consciousness, annoyed at the interruption or whatever it might happen to be. But here's another part of me that's becoming aware of how beautiful that part of the trip is at the same time. I can be in both of those places, but when I am identified more with that place of wonder, that place of internal realization, that's when I'm more connected to or more aligned to higher consciousness. As you choose to go on this journey, as you align to it each step of the way, you give thanks for the lessons that come. If something happens in your life that requires you to see yourself as you truly are, And that includes in those ways that you have believed yourself to be, but are not in truth. You will give thanks for the opportunity to learn. Here is a challenge to respond to this particular life situation in higher consciousness or in lower consciousness. No matter how I choose, no matter what I choose, I can still rejoice in the ability to choose. The path that you are on as we go up the mountain is the path of the Christ, the awakened self, who must see all things in the eyes of the Christ and not be deceived by the names things have been granted in low vibration. Buddha was sometimes referred to as the awakened one. Interesting they would use those words for Christ consciousness, because they're not referring just to, quote, Jesus, but Christ consciousness. The story goes about Buddha when he was under the Bo tree waiting and working on letting go and release for that moment of enlightenment. That after enlightenment occurred, and to translate that into our book right now, his awareness of his divine consciousness, which from that point on, nothing could interrupt. That he was surrounded by a light, by an aura. And people would come up to him and say, "Are you a saint? Are you a god?" He said, "No, I'm awake. I am awake. Where I perceive myself to be in these moments is that sometimes I'm awake and sometimes I'm not. And then I'm being offered the gift of rejoicing for being awake rather than beating myself up and falling asleep. Now, I've come to believe this originally, or not originally, but probably 6 months ago or a year ago, if you asked me about this, I would say, yeah, that's our human condition. Our human condition is to be awake and to be aware, and then to fall into sleep and unawareness again and again and again and again. And to be grateful for when we're awake, not to beat ourselves up for falling asleep. However, at the same time, excuse me a second, I'm not sure why that popped up there. At the same time, I've come to change that belief somewhat. I don't want to make this into a materialistic goal, but I do believe that it is possible to reach a state of awakening or enlightenment, or whatever words you want to use for that. It's possible to do that this lifetime. In fact, if some of you might be part of our Tuesday night group, that was something that came up in our discussion, reflection. And this is a paraphrase, but what one of the books said was, this is your time. It is possible for you to reach that state of being now in this lifetime. And I always kind of push that away a little bit, saying, well, maybe I'm not ready yet. How ready do you have to be? The path that you are on as we go up the mountain is the path of the Christ, of the awakened self, who must see all things in the eyes of the Christ and not be deceived by the names things have been granted in low vibration. Paul had a question, and we take it. What do we do when we see injustice? Are we to bless it? How do we act? Do we fight when we see the need for a fight? Great question to be asked, let's say, on college campuses right now. How far do I take that? What do I do with that one? Here is the true answer. When you are acting in fear, you may disguise it in many ways. And one of the greatest disguises that fear has is anger or helplessness. The need for justice in many ways may be the need to reclaim a self that has been maligned. We will say to each of you, the freedom you have to grow will call you to the circumstances that you need to participate in to continue to evolve. The question of what does one do when one perceives injustice, underline perceive, because you may be perceiving through history and not in truth, will be called forward to you by what is required. If you're familiar with what went on years ago in the 60s, when college campuses were in somewhat the same kind of turmoil as they are right now, there was that same distinction of nonviolence as opposed to violence. Instead of reacting out of anger and fear, reacting out of or responding out of love or care or concern. And then I really do believe, looking back on that time, that eventually was something that stopped that war. Something happened, shift in consciousness, whatever you want to call it, right, that was held on a high level of, not the low level. Low level of consciousness was just more violence. But there was something in principle, idea, energy that was being held on a high vibration that lower vibration could not pull down. Like the civil rights movement. You know, you can unleash your dogs, you can turn on the water cannons, you can do whatever you want to do. Ain't gonna turn around. You can do whatever you want to my body. You can do whatever you want to my behavior. You can do whatever you want to my physical being, but I'm not turning around. Because I know what's right, I know what's the truth. And truth will prevail. Or let's put it another way, truth is prevailing. More, that's a whole different mindset. Truth is prevailing. It might not look that way. It might not feel that way. But I do believe not only in the possibility of that truth, I believe that it is happening right now. Linda.
Last night, late as always with me, I had finished everything I thought, and I was getting ready to go to bed and read a few pages of our lesson today. And then I remembered that I had not done something. It could have waited till today, but I had to jump up, go back in the back bedroom, get on the computer, because I had to look at something with Mother's Day coming up, if this restaurant was going to be open. And typical of what I do, anytime I get on the computer, I have to click on breaking news with the Huffington Post. Well, I've seen this many times before, but it was right there again in old capital letters. The people in Gaza are starving. And it just hit me. I mean, I've seen it before and I thought, yes, they are. And why do we sit here and why do we let this happen? And why is Biden sending more money to Netanyahu when he is so nasty to him or whatever? So I found out what I needed to know about Mother's Day. I get in bed and I start reading. That's just exactly what we're saying now. And I'm going, yes, how do we not look at this injustice? And of course, I said, okay, how can I look at the people in Gaza who are starving? How do I look at that a different way than the fact that they are starving? Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm open to whatever lesson it is here for me, but how can I not get angry? So that's where I was last night.
Not to sound terribly mundane, But I would suggest that one of the things that raises my vibration and the vibration of the world is prayer. And unfortunately, let me drop the unfortunately part. Sometimes that's the last thing I think about. I think about all the material world solutions, possibilities. I think, again, prayer is alignment to divine consciousness. I might still be asking the question, how can I see this differently? How can I respond in a way that's helpful to these people who are suffering? And it might be writing a check. It might be, you know, having an awakening on a college campus, nonviolent awakening on a college campus. Could be a lot of different things. But there is always something in the material world as well as the spiritual world that I can do that can change my perception of things. My perception is true that the people in Gaza are starving. Is that the only thing that's going on here? And each one of us might have a different answer to that question. But sometimes it is sometimes I need to be in a little bit of pain before my ass gets kicked. And sometimes that's a good thing. I don't want to deny the ability we have of responding to someone or something on the material plane. We always have a choice there as well. But we also have a choice on the spiritual plane. It is not ignoring what's going on with somebody or somebody else. It's recognizing that my perception of what is going on here, how can I respond to that differently? And I can. Not by ignoring it, but saying, okay, I don't want to ignore this thing. How can I participate in the healing of this woundedness? Sometimes I might not have any material means of being able to do that. Other times I might. How can I participate in this healing that is calling me? Because I can. Not by ignoring it or not by denying it. But I always have that ability. Now my small self is going, oh, that's not enough. Of course, then I have to ask myself, well, how much is enough? I mean, all of the stuff you get in the mail, save the turtles, save the whales. Right, save the beavers, save, you know, and probably you send save the children. You know, I see these commercials on television of these poor little dogs getting, you know, wrapped up and chained and tied to this thing, not being fed directly and being abused. And my first response is, what about the kids? And I can do something about that, not a whole lot. But I can send my donation into Child Fund and, you know, pray that that goes to the right person at the right time, at the right place. There's always something there that can be done on a higher level of consciousness that might not always satisfy my material world needs, but is still there. Don't deny that one. If you still feel yourself being pushed, then there might be something in the material world you might be called upon to do. It's okay, but it doesn't deny one or the other. We're going to need to put our stuff down and take a break for meditation. So I'm going to ask you to do that, if you don't mind. We'll come back to that sentence that we ended on next week. When you are acting in fear, you may disguise it in many ways. So I'm going to ask you to put your stuff down if you don't mind. Get yourself comfortable in your spot. Take a couple breaths. simple question. How has our work this morning affected the rest of the world? My personality and my ego might not think it does anything at all. And yet, if I were to allow myself to tune into higher consciousness, I realize that our love, our care, our concern, our willingness to grow has touched everyone and everything. Perhaps not in tangible ways or ways that can be measured, but has affected everyone and everything anyway. How has it affected me? I am more at peace than I was 45 minutes ago. I have a lesser need to explain everything. I am more open to divine truth. I am less fearful. I am less angry. My capacity for joy has been stretched. I even have more of a sense of humor towards myself and the petty things in my life that I keep picking at. I am more aware of my choice to be in higher consciousness or not. I don't even have to judge myself for my choice. I am willing to dedicate the rest of this day to higher choice, to higher consciousness. And if I forget, if something pulls me off the path, in those moments of remembering, I will allow myself again to be open, free of judgment, to be open to the energy of unconditional love. I know who I am. I know what I am. I know how I serve. I am grateful. I am grateful. I'm grateful. Deep breath. Stretch a bit and open your eyes when you're ready. Thank you all for being here. Hope you have a great Sunday. We'll see you again soon.
Thank you, Jerry.
Lots of love.
Thank you for the blessing.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you, brothers and sisters.
Thank you.